And it is 9 a.m. in the West Coast. It is 12 noon in the East Coast. And it's 7 p.m. in Jerusalem, the capital of Israel. Today is January 27, 2016. And this is Orly Benny Davis with The Impossible Truth. Today on BBS Radio, we are going to recognize the day for the memorial of Holocaust. The international day that everybody recognized, the day of the huge devastation that passed on the Jewish people in the time of the Second World War. And our, you know, memories are vivid. The stories are still in the making because many years passed since the people could start talking. But one thing I always remember, I always remember my questioning, where was the rest of the world? And today, as we recognize that day and, you know, the suffering of millions of people from all kind of, you know, from all nations, we had it was huge. We must recognize the suffering of people that have happened right now, because I cannot help the people that passed. I can embrace and love the one that survived it, which the state of Israel is doing, and the German people are, you know, compensating for years for that, for the bad deeds of their ancestors. You know, sometimes we say it's not them that are responsible, but they're paying the deeds because, you know, at least you're trying to correct the mistake of the past. But now we still have to recognize the suffering of people that are losing their life constantly in Syria. And I'm not saying it, you know, even they would declare Israel or the Jewish people are the enemy. You know, the fact that they are bad neighbors, it doesn't mean that we have to be one. We need to recognize the suffering, and we need to create some kind of understanding between all sort of fraction there. There are people on the ground that lost their life. There are hundreds of thousands of lost lives, million in the street, and we need those talks to be conducive. And of course, we need to create some kind of understanding between all streams. I collected some information. Let's see what I have for you now. Let's start with that.
Marwan, a radically different format has been announced at this press conference to the direct talks that were Geneva and the proximity talks before between two sides. Why has Stefan de Mistura been pushed to make this hugely different announcement?
Look, clearly, we have a process that has been intensifying, a diplomatic process, since October 30th when they first met in Europe, the United States and Russia, and then later on November 14, and then Kerry invited Lavrov to the United Nations in the end of December, the second part of December, and there where they agreed to UN resolution, UN Security Council resolution 2254. Mm. Clearly, throughout this 2 months process and through today, there's a realignment of the American position with the Russian position, and that's where de Mistura falls. He falls on this realignment of basically the Americans moving closer to the Russians on the question of the opposition, on the questions of negotiations, and on the questions of the Mistura. Because for the first time in the history of these negotiations, United Nations Council Resolution 2254 on the assistance of the Russians designated the Mistura as the person who had this leeway of basically defining who will negotiate with the Syrian government come 29th.
Are we again then seeing the Russians leaning on de Mistura, getting more opposition groups involved than initially, for example, the Saudis wanted?
Clearly. And not only that, remember, it was a bit of a while ago, three years ago, that the United States and others, the so-called international community, called the Syrian National Coalition the sole representative of the Syrian people. We've come a long way since then. Mm. Suddenly, after the Russians intervened militarily on September 30th, was it about 4 or 5 months ago, in Syria, and the bombardment started and the bombardment continues by the Russians in order to affect the negotiations. Certainly the Americans, pragmatic as they are, have come around to agree with the Russians on a Russian resolution, because 2254 was a draft Russian resolution that, by the way, was rejected by Saudi Arabia, was rejected by Turkey, as well as Qatar and others. They've rejected 2254. But the United States nonetheless insisted on going along with the Russians, who already have a huge military presence there. And de Mistura, in so many ways, as a seasoned diplomat, is speaking out of that sort of realignment between Washington and Moscow.
The Russians had a point, though, didn't they? It was saying that there were too many fighters in the opposition at the talks. There weren't enough secularists, for example. There weren't the Kurds there. I mean, they were excluded from the initial list.
In Riyadh, I'm not going to call it the miracle. We're exaggerating here. Anyway, the success of Riyadh, because in America, in the sense of considering the very tough conditions in Syria, the death of hundreds of thousands and so forth, to have people come to Riyadh, and who came to Riyadh? There are Kurds, there are communists, secularists, women, men, Islamists, liberals, and fighters on the ground. So we have the two main fighting groups that are not considered terrorists by the international community or by the European Geneva and Vienna, which is Jaish al-Islam and Ahrar al-Sham. These are the two main fighting groups on the ground in Syria within the general opposition. Those who are notably Islamists turned up in Riyadh and agreed to a democratic state, you know, enshrined with human rights and so on and so forth. They've agreed to that communique that established a united opposition that will go to the as a delegation to the negotiations. So we actually, in Riyadh, something spectacular happened. Now, for de Mistura to come back again now and say, well, you know, I'm going to have civil rooms. I'm going to be talking to these first and those third and on. And the government is the government. The government still rules in Damascus. The war basically continues, and it's being legitimized more and more through the Russian bombardment that is going on in Syria, with a new American alignment with the Russian position. So really, when I look at this, I can see how it's a slippery slope. I can see how de Mistura is being overly pragmatic, as sincere as he might be.
But did he have a choice? I mean, you had the Riyadh group saying they wouldn't come to the talks without these preconditions, the ceasefire, the humanitarian aid. Those weren't happening anyway. So would they have come to the talks anyway?
But these are actually UN Security Council resolution mandated conditions.
Sure.
That there has to be some sort of a ceasefire, some sort of a humanitarian assistance, because you can't expect the people to go to negotiate with a regime that continues to incarcerate them, continues to kill them, and continues to starve them. So the United Nations Security Council resolution, in fact, mandated that. So the Syrian opposition is within its rights to say, look, before we go and talk to a regime that we consider murderer, et cetera, et cetera, let's at least have some fruits, you know, before we get there. Anyway, this is not happening, and clearly we have some shortcuts here. But fundamentally, what is quite surprising, not shocking, but surprising, and I'm not sure how the Syrian opposition is going to be reacting later on this evening. I'm really looking with very, impatience, if you will, because if I heard them correctly, and I saw a number of them here in Doha before, they said in every possible clear wording, they will not go to negotiations if there's going to be more than one delegation.
And now there's every delegation.
And now we will see, yes.
Will there be too many voices at these talks? Is it too crowded now? I mean, we have Stefan Mistura saying he's going to be shuttling between, he doesn't even know how many rooms at this stage.
You know, I, just as on a personal note, if you will, I've met de Mistura before he came, the United Nations or the international communities. Envoy to Syria, and I met him in Rome, and he actually asked for the thing, and we sat down, we talked about various things, and you can tell the Mistura is the kind of guy he's proud to speak Arabic, he's proud to know the region, he is a seasoned diplomat, and clearly he has started his interest in Syria. And one thing you know about the Mistura is he's a very charming diplomat, and he's probably more than willing to talk to civil society and to women group and so on and so forth. But in the end of the day, is that the real nuggets and axes of power in Syria? I mean, to have some kind of a discussion about different groups, about their wishes? Because at the end of the day, the Syrian government is the one that's coming now with basically blood and fire to this, to these talks, and saying, governance, well, look, we have just changed our constitution. Elections, we just had elections. So whatever you're asking, we as a regime have already started this thing. It's going to be very hard to pinpoint some of these issues that are crucial to the opposition, that are crucial to the Syrian people, if the Mistura is going to carry these generalistic, abstract, over months of negotiations of proximity. It doesn't sound to me like the serious negotiations we were promised in Geneva 1 or 2.
But it is what we've got right now.
It is what we've got.
All right, and we are back. This is Orly Benny Davis with the Impossible Truth, giving some stage to the Syrian situation. Of course, I think that this dialogue that we just heard is one of the more comprehensive understanding of the situation on the ground right now. But one thing I would like to correct, the fact that, you know, the UN resolution stated that they're going to have election, the Assad regime cannot say he already had an election. The election is supposed to be after the recomposition of the intermediate government. So resolution 2254 of Security Council, the UN resolution of 2015, makes the peace process viable. So the timetable for the talks is really clear. It's like they have to talk to the people, the party, opposition, and Kurds, Syrian. Those are three factors. I know that in the opposition you have two different groups, which the guy spoke about, the previous conversation. But the idea is that you have three people, the three grounds that needs to be overcome. And they are going to talk about different rooms. It's about how you, first of all, how you're going to bring the people back to the place, how you're going to take care of the wounded and everybody that needs help, how you contribute to the ceasefire, and how are you going to enforce it. There is no much, you know, don't create so much trouble in the process. This is the week. It was supposed to start on Monday. This is Wednesday. It's supposed to start now on Friday. Let's get it going. And I don't understand if they are bombarding it still these days. I really hope not. I really hope to God not. Because more devastation cannot happen, you know, in this region. Anyway, guys, we are on our Wednesday, where we pay tribute to the Italian music and to the Italian people. And today, more than any day, I want to pay tribute to the extraordinary, extraordinary gesture that the people of Italy gave today to the memorial of the Holocaust. Because in the Il Foglio, the newspaper, they had a yarmulke, a kippah, to the people who bought the newspaper. It's a yarmulke. It's the head covering of the Jewish people, but it's a cover for respect before God. And they pay tribute to this day, and I salute Il Foglio newspaper, and I wish them all the best. And let's play some music for them in honor of them.
Questa città
Right, we are back, and I'm sure that this music got you going this morning, everybody in America. And, you know, there is so much happening everywhere, and I'm putting some intense, you know, focus on the Syrian situation right now. While we have in the region, we have so much shuffling of the cards, and you consider that we have on the ground here in Israel right now the Prime Minister of Greece, and not long ago the Prime Minister of Israel was in Greece visiting, and I think I have some audio from that part. But before we continue, I want to salute all the South Carolinian women leaders that endorse Jeb Bush for the presidential race. God bless you. Hey, South Carolinian women are tough, and if they endorse Jeb Bush, I think they got something right, because there is a debate tomorrow, if I'm correct. Which Donald Trump does not want to go to. Oh, boy, is that spoiled boy really doesn't want to play along with other kids? You know, it's a presidential race. You have no really saying in which one you're going to. You just have to come and play along and play nice, and maybe you win. But, oh, no, he doesn't play it right. So, whatever it is, the GOPs, you know, they have different rules. I want to go back to some more Italian music, but this one, we need some quiet music, something to relax, okay? So let's have something else, okay? I'm sure I picked some sweet music now for my friends everywhere. The one I love, the one I love forever.
Preso la chitarra e suono per te il tempo di imparare non lo è non so suonare ma suono per te la senti questa voce chi canta il mio cuore.
And we are back. I love radio. I love radio. Radio is the future. I think that if anybody is aware to the fact that everybody is talking on the radio these days, the most important people, they switch from TV to media, to the different media, because radio is the future. You can talk to the radio and you can listen to it, and you don't have to focus all your energy and all your system in one screen. And it's something that actually relax the people. You can enjoy music and you can love the subject and talk about them and listen while you're doing something else. I'm saying talking about it because I'm doing both. I'm listening to the radio and I'm doing the talk sometimes. So the idea is how to create some stream, a constant stream of ideas. We need to start thinking about it, because since the internet is a very good facilitator for good things, the same as bad, but let's use it for the good things. And once we start having ideas, people using it to have classes, of course, but much more. We need to study the history so we won't repeat the same mistake, as everybody says. So it's really easy. And knowing that how things can come about and create a fraction and impossible situation, we can learn how to avoid it in time. Oh, maybe we can realize that that's where we're going and change the route, you know, like everybody else. Not a problem. And it will help. I think radio is good. So sometimes when we double our music and we're doing, you know, live show, and we are very human in that, it's normal too. All right, let's go back to some of the news that we have. Let's listen to it.
Let's join our diplomatic editor, James Bayes, in Geneva. And James, no guest list has in fact been published, so there's real confusion, isn't there, about exactly who has been invited to these talks on Friday?
Real confusion, and we are literally having to try and speak to all of the key players to see whether they've got an invitation or not. And it's clearly proving very controversial who's been invited and who's not being invited. Let me go back to the beginning, Felicity, because it is complicated. Remind you, this is the process for these talks, was called the Vienna process, series of meetings in Vienna. During those meetings in Vienna, they decided that Saudi Arabia would be given the job of coordinating the opposition. So Saudi Arabia did that series of conferences in Saudi Arabia. They came up with the so-called Riyadh list. And those on the list include some of the main fighting groups in Syria among the opposition. They are concerned because then the UN Security Council passed a resolution which said the UN would have the final decision on invitations, and Russia said it wasn't happy with the Riyadh list. Stefan de Mistura has said he wants the widest representation possible. So the Riyadh list say we're the real opposition, no one else should be invited. Stefan de Mistura has clearly invited other opposition members because Al Jazeera has spoken to them. Controversial too because of what about the Kurds and who would be invited representing the Kurds. Turkey deeply concerned about a Kurdish group called the PYD. They're the one who are very active militarily in northern Syria, been fighting ISIL, even working alongside the US military, but not liked by the rest of the opposition, who say they're not really at any point fighting the Assad regime. So what has de Mistura done about the PYD? Well, it seems he's not invited them, because in the last few minutes Al Jazeera has spoken to Saleh Muslim, who is the PYD leader. He's actually already here in Switzerland for the talks, but he has not got an invitation. And what's really interesting here is that he's also with some of the other members of the opposition who aren't on the Riyadh list, people who have got invitations from de Mistura, and some of them are saying if he's not invited, they're not going. So really getting very, very controversial.
Very controversial, very complicated, lots of confusion. Does it mean that the talks might be in danger of not taking place or getting underway on Friday then?
Well, Stefan de Mistura, when he spoke to press 24 hours ago, he said he expected there'll be a lot of drama. He said there'll be walk-ins, walk-outs. Well, I think some of those are going to take place even before the talks start. And the really big decision, which we need to wait for in a few hours, is those members of the opposition, including some of the key fighting groups who were on that Riyadh list. Are they going to come to these talks? They say they're going to decide at some point on Wednesday. That will be important because without some of these key groups who are the ones who are actually fighting the Assad regime on the ground, then you wonder what these talks could achieve.
All right, and we are back. It's Orly Benny Davis with Impossible Truth, and we are on January 27th today. It's a memorial today of commemorating, oh my God, my English, the Day of Holocaust, which is very, very important date to remember everybody and to remind everybody that we're not going to do it over again. There is nothing going to, you know, stop the world from interacting with the slaughter of human being, and we need to really take some points of reference and listen to what's going on in Geneva, in Riyadh, and what the peace talks are going to be all about. Of course, there's going to be some time to think and to assess the situation, but it doesn't matter as long as they start and the ceasefire is in place. That's it. Friday, they need to have ceasefire. I don't know how to who to call, only to God to help everybody, the parties, to come to their senses and understand. And, of course, the U.S., Russia will coordinate everything to help them. Of course, the European in Geneva, you know, they are very, very important people and, you know, party to the game. I know that sometimes in the game of politics, it's really nice to be recognized, and it's nice to be, you know, in the news. And sometimes people use a controversial issue in a way that can have strange repercussions. And I'm saying that it's because there was some comments back and forth from the chairman of the United Nations, Ban Ki-moon, and the prime minister of Israel. And the speed, you know, they arrived to levels that are not really respective of the people they represent, because Ban Ki-moon justified terror attack as, you know, people that have a bad situation, they resolve to terrorism, which today, if you see the news in Europe, all those immigrants that came and were welcome actually act up and rioted in the streets. So I think that you cannot connect violence with anything. Violence is a choice of humanity. And if you endorse it, you actually, or if you justify it, you facilitate it. And Prime Minister Netanyahu, that doesn't have all the world, you know, all the time in the world to be sympathetic or even graceful, he says, you know, when you do that, you endorse terrorism. And it's not like Ban Ki-moon is endorsing terrorism. It's not condemning it, and that's bad. So I think that those two figures needs to back off a little and understand that they're managing people, and it's not their own party or their own classroom that they are directing. Ban Ki-moon is a respectable guy, that he's questioning the action of defense, self-defense of Israel, create a really, really a big problem. And I'll tell you what's a big problem is. The big problem is that when you in the United Nations come along and help solve the situation on the ground, you are like magic. You create the best solution to so many problems. But once you decide to go against, you can create the worst condition for people. And I'll tell you, what did you do in history that I can claim now that you're doing created a very big, dangerous, and slippery situation for the world? The issue of Jerusalem. And I'm coming back again and again because I know for a fact that when, you know, the United Nations, oh, the League of Nations, actually, United Nations was not created then, decided to give Israel, you know, the land of Palestine, that it's Palestine, the territory, didn't think about the repercussion of putting the same name of the people of that nomad that live on the ground, that there were, you know, Jewish and Arabs. They divide them by names and calling the other Palestinian, where everybody were Palestinian. That's one. And that's a shortcoming. This is a kind of fatalistic mistake. Okay, now you guys have and Palestinian that are not Israeli. That's by determination that you guys decided. And instead of changing them, he said, you cannot call yourself Palestine on the land that was given to the Jewish people. You cannot. No, but the United Nations didn't care. It didn't pay attention to this. It's a little small thing that people undermined. And there you go. Now you have a situation. Now the land of Palestine that was given to the Jewish people by Balfour Declaration 1917, and was concord in the League of Nations, with the same Balfour Declaration embedded in this. Now you said, oh no, it's the Palestinians. This is the Jewish people have Palestine. It never changed, right? They have a home in Palestine. Is it a Jewish home? That's what's reading in your paper. Did you read it lately, Mr. Ban Ki-moon? And more, Jerusalem. Jerusalem, oh, beautiful, lovely Jerusalem. You guys said, oh, international. What did you think? What did you think when you did that? International Jerusalem means what? Oh, you'll take care of it. Oh, yeah. You took care of it in the first 100 years, 100 days. What happened? The guy that you put in charge was killed. Something like that. Was it 100 days? The man that was in charge, did he send another one? Did you say that the international community is going to recognize Jerusalem as international and then you are going to override, look, and you just neglected it for the last 50 years or 60, 70 years? Well, what did you do? You took it from where? You didn't take it. You didn't take charge of it. You neglected it and you left it. Your body as a United Nations is so negligent that I don't understand why people are paying membership. And I'm not saying it's just enough to see how shortcoming you are in every fraction. And from all things, I don't hear anybody saying stop the fighting in Syria, but stop the fighting. I'm calling today, again, everybody, stop the killing of innocent civilians everywhere. I know people are everywhere in a mess, but we need to start calling them. Stop it. It's about to be time to go back and restart building. We have so much work to do. It's not funny. And the United Nations, Jerusalem is the holy city before God. Doesn't belong to anybody. That was the claim that the Jewish people did then when you asked them. And which, for me, it was a shortcoming because as a custodian of holy places that God bestowed upon the Jewish people that responsibility by biblical. You know what? If you understand the Bible, if you believe in the Bible, you have to accept it as the world, a word of God. I cannot invent something else. I'm sorry. So Jerusalem is a holy city for everybody, for all the world. We are the custodian. It means that we are supposed to facilitate it. You know, the custodian of a place is not the really owner of the place. The owner is the God. But we are supposed to keep it, maintain it. The United Nations, you fail. And God will, have your, the day that where you will have to answer. But it's before, it's between you and God. It's nothing that I can do. But what I'm saying is when you facilitate terrorism as far as you endorse understanding of a violent act, that's no good. All right? Let's listen to some more music, Italian music, and we'll be right after that.
Chiudo gli occhi e penso a lei, il profumo dolce della pelle sua, è una voce dentro che mi sta portando dove nasce il sole. Sole sono le parole, ma se vanno scritte tutto può cambiare, senza più timore te lo voglio.
All right, and we are back. It's Orly Benny Davis with Impossible Truth. You just listened to Questo Grande Amore, something, a great song from the Eurovision, something that I tell you I love. I love dearly. Now, before we pass to the next news, I want to recommend very much from, David Horowitz Freedom Center. Just got an invitation for Wednesday, February 24th, 2016, in Beverly Hills, California. You got the best. You got Jonathan Sandis. Is the great son of Sir Winston Churchill, is going to talk about God and Churchill. When Winston Churchill was a boy at 16, he already had a vision for its purpose in life. Is the country will be subjected somehow to the tremendous invasion. It's hard. So you guys in California, how lucky you are. You're gonna go to the Freedom Center, and you can call them and ask them, David Horowitz Freedom Center, about this incredible luncheon reception. All right, so you go there. Now let's go back to something we have to talk about: the Turks and the airplane, the Russian airplane.
Turkish Prime Minister Ahmet Davutoglu revealed that he personally gave the order to down the Russian Su-24 fighter jet that led to the death of one pilot. Despite all the warnings, we had to destroy the aircraft, said Davutoglu to a meeting of his AK party, going on and saying, the Turkish armed forces carried out orders given by me personally. Both Davutoglu and Turkey's President Erdogan, who is the commander-in-chief of the nation's armed forces, I should mention, continued to defend this decision to shoot down the Russian Su-24 because the country has a right to defend itself, and that includes defending its national airspace. And they insist that the Su-24 aircraft made an incursion into Turkish airspace that lasted 17 seconds, and that is the time during which it was shot down. There was a letter sent to the UN Security Council by the United Nations, by Turkey's permanent mission to the United Nations, rather, and it says that for 17 seconds, the Russian Su-24 was inside Turkish territory, and this is where it gets really interesting. NATO announced that they agree with Turkey's claim, and they pledged to stand in solidarity with Turkey's decision to shoot down this Russian plane. If you're skeptical that this is just about Turkey defending their sovereignty and their borders and their airspace, the question is, what does Turkey have to gain from this, right? This appears to be a move to start creating more tension with Russia, to prevent a West plus Russia coalition to fight ISIS. And this is the type of thing we're seeing French President François Hollande attempt to do after the horrible attacks in Paris recently. In fact, right after this happened, the cover of French newspaper Le Figaro said, quote, Turkey sabotages coalition against ISIS by shooting down this Russian plane. So this was probably something that in Turkey they were just waiting for. Wait for any misstep by Russia, we'll get entangled, and we will break up this possible coalition.
It could very well be. Am I comfortable saying 100% that's the case? No.
But are you ever comfortable saying anything 100%?
I can 100% say that your hair is looking better than usual today.
Thank you.
You got your product back. But look, Russia responded, right? They said, no, we're not going to go to war. They imposed sanctions immediately. Mm.
All right. And we are back. Well, we come up with the idea that, you know, an attack on the Russian plane wasn't the smartest idea. Maybe you won one, but you failed the whole mission. Let's listen to this.
On Monday, I told you about the Turkish Prime Minister admitting that he personally gave the order for Turkey to shoot down a Russian plane which had gone over, which was in Turkish airspace for 17 seconds. And we sort of speculated that this may be connected to Turkey's desire to drive a wedge between Russia and the West, where tensions have been noticeably not very significant since the terrorist incident in Paris. And we now have more information which suggests that our speculation, and that of many others, Lewis, I mean, it was not just us speculating, may have been absolutely spot on. Russia is now aiding Kurdish rebels, a group that has been labeled as terrorists by Turkey. In layman's terms, this is an alliance which, to Turkey's geopolitical aspirations, particularly in Syria, could be very, very bad. Turkey is now in a situation where the legendary Syria-Turkey ISIS oil train is being destroyed by Russian bombers. And we are increasingly, Lewis, seeing what is shaping up. And I don't know what I would predict would even happen here. This is really shaping up to be interesting for a number of reasons. Number one, because of how it's going to influence Turkey and ISIS and that connection, which I'll get to a little more. But also because of the way in which it may change the dynamic of Russia-Western relations.
Yeah, I don't think it's reasonable to expect there to be some type of war. I think both countries are going to avoid that at all costs. But Syria, the Syrian battlefield could become a lot more bloody as a result of these tensions increasing.
And in addition to this alliance that we are now seeing at the Paris Climate Summit, Vladimir Putin, and I understand we have to take everything Vladimir Putin says with a grain of salt. Vladimir Putin said that Russia has evidence that Turkey shot down that Russian plane in order to, quote, ensure oil deliveries by ISIS. We can't believe everything that Vladimir Putin says, but what's clear is that the rift is ramping up. If indeed it is true that there is this connection between either Erdogan, the Turkish president, or others in Turkey, and ISIS's illegal oil trade, and that Erdogan, as some are saying, personally benefited from it, that would be huge. And it also wouldn't be all that shocking, given what we've learned about Erdogan over the last couple of years.
Well, I think that I would kind of be surprised by that. I don't really see Erdogan or Turkey in general.
All right. The situation is getting complicated because we have players that try to outsmart the others where they're not that smart. So they're playing, Turkey is playing with Russia, and now we have the Greece and Cyprus is lining up with this part of the game with Israel to maybe override the Turkey importance in the region. So you have the Turks against the Russian, and of course Turks have a long standing up with Israel, which kind of tried to warm up after the shoot up of the Russian plane, but the Israeli are not, they didn't conclude anything. Everything is in talks. Stage. So now the Greece government is cooperating and building up some business ventures with Israel. Maybe it can create, Greece can be the next hub of gas, because Israel has discovered tons of gas here. So we have the possibility to pass it to Europe through Greece. We don't need Turkey pipeline, I think. So Turkey is playing with fire for a long time, and she's trying to hold both sides of the sticks, and it's not going to help them in the long run. They're going to be outsmarted by the rest because they cannot outsmart them. The latest move showed that they didn't calculate right their bids to the future. Anyway, good news. Dubai backed one of the incredible international hospitality firm to build a $2 billion in an Atlantic resort in Hawaii. Guys, Hawaii, that's the best place to build. It's awesome. Great. And I think that since we're running out of time, let's see if we can have the conclusion, something from the meeting of the Prime Minister with the Greece Prime Minister.
I'm agreeing. I'm just a little bit.
We talked about.
Θέλω να σας πω ότι είναι μεγάλη χαρά μας που βρισκόμαστε στην Ιερουσαλήμ, μια ιστορική πόλη. Και έχουμε την ευκαιρία να συνομιλήσουμε μαζί σας με την ηγεσία του Ισραήλ.
Ατά δουγμά λεχάχ σε μη שנבחר למנהיג יכול לגשר על הפער ועל הקונפליקטים הקיימים בדמוקרטיה.
Ελπίζετε βεβαίως ότι στην Ελλάδα
So let me shake your hand as a Democrat. Thank you so very much. Mr.
All right, guys, I'm sorry. It's Greece and translated to Hebrew. I love to translate it, but the gist of the thing is this is from the previous meeting. But the Prime Minister of Greece is in Israel, and as I know, the people that playing in the region, they are very, very nice people, and I'm sure that with Israeli, they're going to get along and create some kind of understanding. And for the future of Greece, I think those enterprises are very well welcome, because everybody needs to create some kind of engine of economical growth. Something that the European cannot sustain right now because they have something on their hands, very busy hands they have. So it's our Wednesday session is ending now. And before I say goodbye, I just want to remind everybody to pray a little, because in everything that we have, we can have some helping hands from God. And I'm sure you all understand that we have to overcome this challenge, and we'll have to win as the good people. I mean, the good people, the white hat, the people that work hard, those messengers of good in the world, those people that work day in, day out, those women that carry those children on their hands, those people that take care of the sick. And, you know, and elderly in the hospital, there are people that babysit so much for the babies that need to be cured. There are so many angels in this world. Let's give them respect. Let's tell them that we love them. And let's pray to God to keep them safe. And let's hope that those savage, those people that decide to destroy the world, they'll disappear like they arrived, like from nowhere, just disappear. God, help us make them change their heart. Whatever they had to bring harm, to make it bring good. That's our prayer for today. So let's salute you all with some Italian music, and just remember that I love you and I'm here for you all the time. God bless you all. Ciao, ciao.